It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. You either love them or loathe them. Pigs help Georgia's economy a lot, but they can also cause a lot of problems. A University of Georgia report last year says feral swine in the state caused nearly $99 million in crop damage and $51 million in non-crop damage. That's from 2014. Historian Mark Essex says our relationship with pigs is a complicated one. He's the author of Lesser Beasts, A Snout-to-Tail History of the Humble Pig, and he joins me from Asheville, North Carolina. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, Celeste. Great to be here.
It's good to have you. And I wonder how many people may have been surprised that Georgia had that many feral pigs. Is it common for states to have a wild pig population?
Particularly in the South. The thing about pigs is that they breed really quickly. A cow will gestate for 9 months and give you one calf, maybe two. A goat for 5 months and give you a couple of kids, maybe three, but a pig gestates for just about 4 months and will give you maybe a dozen piglets, and each of those will start breeding within a year. So if you want to build up a herd very quickly, you want pigs. That's been good for people who want to eat them, not so good for game wardens and golf course managers who want to keep them from destroying crops and turf.
I didn't even think about golf courses, but are these wild pigs in states like Georgia and other southern states that you mentioned, did they used to be domesticated?
For the most part, they are feral pigs. There's a few pockets of true wild boar that escape from game parks, but almost all of them are former domestic pigs that have escaped into the wild and started doing their piggy thing, breeding and eating like crazy.
Okay, so why would they cause almost $100 million in damage? What are they doing that is so damaging?
For the most part, they are rooting. The pigs have this miraculous organ on the front of their face called a snout. It's really better to think of it as a shortened elephant's trunk rather than as a nose, because most of the pigs' senses, nerves related to touch are concentrated in the snout, which is also incredibly powerful. So it can get pretty much wherever it wants to be and eat wherever it wants. What's made the pigs so valuable over the course of the last 10,000 years or so that they've partnered with humans is that they are omnivores. They will eat just about everything humans eat and many things that they won't. So if you're growing a crop in the field, chances are the pig will be happy to eat it. If you're growing a crop under the ground, potatoes, tubers, the roots of many plants, pigs find those delicious too. And they have an exquisite sense of smell. If there's something edible, a pig's going to find it.
But one of the things, and you talk about this in your quite a bit in your book, the fact that they are omnivores has also been part of the problem with pigs and our relationship, because in many cases, when pigs have been banned, either by a country, by legal means, or because of a religion, it's been because of what they eat, right?
It's been because of what they eat. Yeah, the history of pig domestication is interesting because unlike goats, sheep, cows, where we think that they became domestic through the process of hunting, hunting turned into herding, turned into domestication, we think that pigs became domestic in much the way dogs did. As soon as people settle down into permanent villages, one of the things they do is start producing a lot of garbage. And the pigs and the dogs started lurking around town and eating that food. So gradually, the pigs that were best at this process, the wild boar that were best at that process, evolved in a true evolutionary process into what we call domestic pigs. That was a great advantage. You took something that you very much did not want, which was rotting food, other kinds of garbage, you turned it into something that you did want, which was meat and fat. So that's an amazing alchemical process. But it also associated them with filth because they ate not only garbage, but also, say, human waste and some rather unsavory things. So they were thought of as filthy scavengers that polluted cities, polluted temples throughout the Near East, where the first pig prohibitions arose. Nobody ever sacrificed pigs to the gods. They were considered unclean, and anybody who was concerned about holiness and sacredness kept away from them.
Which is really not fair to the pig, right? Because it's what we were feeding them, you know, that made them have such low opinions of them. It's, you know, it's like dressing your kid in awful clothing and then say they're a bad dresser. But the natural state of a pig is not filthy. I mean, pigs in their natural state are not filthy, filthy beasts. Isn't that right?
They're actually rather tidy. If you give pigs room to roam and enough material to build a nest out of, they build a fresh nest every night. When they wake up in the morning, they walk well away from the nest before doing their business. The one thing that has associated pigs with filth is that thermoregulation. They don't sweat if they want to cool. They need to take a nice bath in water.
They roll in mud.
Exactly.
Yeah, but they usually clean it off.
They will clean it off, and frankly, you can't blame them. The good Lord made pigs such that they needed to wallow to stay cool. We shouldn't hold that against them, should we?
And no, and there are plenty of animals actually that wallow in mud, including human beings. Go check Google Images. There's plenty of mud events all over the country. I mean, I got to put up some defense for the humble pig here because there are some low opinions. But on the other hand, pigs have been really important to humankind. And that's one of the reasons they're so important to the economy. And that is because A, they're delicious. And B, so many pieces of the pig are usable.
Yeah, there's some interesting studies coming out of ancient Rome where you find strange butchery cuts on the bones of pigs dating back a couple thousand years that suggested that people were very carefully carving off every tasty morsel from the head of a pig, suggesting that they were really getting every bit of value. And that's always been the story of the pig. Not only do they breed quickly, not only do they produce a lot of meat, but all of that meat cures really well with salt. Unlike, say, pork or mutton, which turns to shoe leather when you cure it, pork gets better.
Wait, and you that's just said pork or mutton. What was the other? You're thinking of beef?
Oh, I'm sorry. Beef or mutton is what I meant. Forgive me. When you think of jerky, it's a very tough and leathery thing. When you think of ham or bacon, they only get more delicious with time. And we've really only had artificial refrigeration for the past 100, 125 years or so. Before that, if you wanted a meat supply to last, you had to cure it in salt. And that's one of the reasons that pork was so crucial, because it was the meat that preserved best in salt.
So I want to take us back to this report out of the University of Georgia, which launched this conversation. That's a report in which they tallied up numbers in 2014 and found that wild pigs in Georgia caused almost $99 million in crop damage and $51 million in non-crop damage. So that's the negative, the con side of that equation. But what are the pros? What exactly do pigs add to an ecosystem?
Most biologists would tell you not very much at all. They're mostly destructive. Pigs are not native to the New World. They were introduced on Columbus's second voyage. They've been doing damage ever since. The one advantage that pigs have, that feral pigs have, is that people like to hunt them. And there have been some studies that suggested the reason that pigs are spreading so quickly, feral pigs are spreading so quickly and becoming such a problem, is not just that they breed quickly and reproduce, but that rather unethical hunters are actually carting them all around the South and releasing them because they want more opportunities to hunt.
So you're saying people are capturing feral pigs and moving them into their own neighborhoods?
Correct.
Okay. So, Mark Essig, you are, I mean, I think it's fair to say you're a pig expert, right?
I'm a pig expert. I'm a pig historian and a pig expert.
Okay. So, tell me something about pigs that people need to know but don't.
I think one of the most surprising facts to me when I was researching this book, and the book, again, Lesser Beasts, it covers 10,000 years of pigs' history from first domestication right up through the present, is how important they were in the process of colonization. America thinks of itself as a nation of beef eaters. But for most of our history, right up until after World War II, we actually ate a lot more pork than we did beef. This was true in the colonial period when we were busy with other things, and we didn't have time for the sort of careful husbandry that cows and sheep required. The cows got mired in swamps. The sheep got eaten by wolves. But the pigs, you turn them loose in the woods, they would take care of themselves, much as today's feral pigs do. And then people would round them up in the fall, slaughter them, and cure them for a winter meat supply. You can find this in Little House on the Prairie, any all sorts of records of pioneer life. It was the pig that was really crucial in the settling of America. And then this was true all over the world. In most of those other countries, once the pioneer phase ended, that's when they switched over to grassland, to cows, to sheep.
Yeah.
America stuck with pigs largely because of a new world crop, which was corn. We fed them corn, we fattened them, we sent them to slaughter. So
and
that's why...
Yeah, they've been important ever since. We have to end the conversation there, although I bet we could keep it going. That's historian Mark Essig, author of the book Lesser Beasts, A Snout-to-Tail History of the Humble Pig. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Celeste.